this one I can drag out.
Welcome to The Rest Is Noise, a podcast on a mission to assign songs to every concept, person, people, place, or thing in the universe. We're all suckers for this week's topic, octopuses. I'm your host, Martin Dickey, and the eight-armed monster that sits before me consists of music, travel, and lifestyle journalist, Richie McKeegan.
Hello.
Calopegian philosopher, Nathan Lee.
Hello.
Cellist out of London's darkly lyrical indie band, Madam, it's Sarah Gill.
Hello.
And we couldn't get Paul the Octopus, so we had to settle for the former editor of cigaros.co.uk, Paul McAllister.
Hello there.
Paul, feeling like you might be able to emulate your namesake and predict today's winner?
Well, based on previous form, certainly not me. I don't know, I think I'm going to scuttle over in the direction of Richie and place myself there.
For any of you who don't remember Paul the Octopus, he correctly predicted the result of all seven of Germany's matches at the 2010 FIFA World Cup, as well as Spain's victory over Holland in the final.
Well, at the time I thought that was a massive con, but all that I've learned made me think that maybe Paul just studied the form.
They have arms, not tentacles. Tentacles only have suckers at their tip.
What has tentacles then?
A slug.
A slug has tentacles.
Where?
A squid.
I thought a squid also has arms. Has a couple of tentacles.
Doesn't
maybe, but
I thought it had six suckers all the way down, rather than just at the end.
And they're octopuses, not octopi. The word octopus comes from Greek, not Latin. And if it were a Latin word, it wouldn't be pluralised with the I ending anyway.
Thanks for that.
So where have we seen octopuses in the limelight recently?
YouTube.
Blue Planet.
Oh, correct.
Blue Planet 2.
In the recent Coral Reef episode of Blue Planet 2, an octopus teams up with a group of fish to hunt for prey. But there'll be no teaming up for my contestants as they arm wrestle their way to deciding the best song to embody octopuses.
Glove slap.
And it'll be you, Richie, who'll be removing this week's proverbial glove and slapping your opponent's faces with it. Richie, what have you chosen?
I've chosen Land Cruising by AK Paul. Well, to accidentally keep that theme going, that was AK Paul, who isn't an octopus, but is the brother of Jai Paul of Jasmin and BTSTU fame. And AK Paul was the production brain behind his brother's tracks. This particular one came out on their own text message subscription label, the Paul Institute, last year. These are very elusive brothers, the Paul brothers. And the Paul Institute has just bought a new home, which is part of the old BBC building in Shepherd's Bush. And they grew up in Rainer's Lane in West London. So it's very much their kind of their home turf.
Okay, I'm talking of turf, Land Cruising. Are we thinking it's, octopuses have been known to leave the sea and cross land to hunt?
This is true. So it was thought that the Abdopus octopus, which is a wonderful name, which was in one of Attenborough's shows in 2015, these North Australian octopuses, which would kind of lurk in rock pools and then strut over the land to hunt crabs and then go into other pools. And they were thought to be one of the few octopuses that did this. But at the very end of October, dozens of octopuses were spotted crawling across the beach in Wales. And a local fisherman spotted up to 25 of these curled octopuses. And for three nights in a row at New Quay Beach in West Wales, they would sort of creep along the beach. He claimed it was a bit like an end of day scenario. He said he'd never seen them do this. And I thought that these guys needed a bit of an anthem.
My only problem with that is I can see them strutting across a beach to that record in LA or Rio. Wales, for some reason, doesn't quite cut it for me. Even though these guys are from London, the Pauls.
My issue is that the end of days reference is fine until you go back to only up to 25 octopuses.
Oh, the end is coming now. It's 25 of them.
I'm sure he says something to that effect. But so, yeah, so there are now numerous accounts of land cruising octopuses. They've been known to break out of tanks at aquariums and walk across to other tanks and eat things. They've been known to sort of open jars and doors and get out of things. They're definitely not averse to a bit of land cruising.
And when they get out of their tanks, they can fit through anything essentially that's the size of their eye and move through piping. And most of them get back out to sea if they escape their tank. They hate being kept in captivity. And latest studies have shown that some octopuses might even have a sense of humour. One octopus was observed by a team of researchers holding some food that they guessed it didn't like, moved along the tank with the food held aloft, and as they all followed it with their eyes, it then just dumped it in the plug hole at the end of the tank.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Well, I mean, they definitely deserve an anthem.
My problem, I agree, this track does suit the idea of a strutting octopus quite well. There's definitely a strut to the song. But this isn't characteristic of all octopuses, land cruising. It can't possibly embody an octopus because actually only a few octopuses do it.
That is a fair point. I think what I wanted to shine the spotlight on was perhaps the most special of their characteristics and what's perhaps becoming some of their more notable. It's certainly where we pay attention as humans, is we've seen them predict World Cups. We've seen them having jokes, and we're only just starting to see them strutting around on land in places where we didn't think that happened.
I don't really like this track very much. I find it way too derivative of Prince.
So why not just listen to Prince?
Right.
If this was a Prince record, if Land Cruising was by Prince, would you listen to it?
I would say no.
Well, more importantly, would an octopus strut to it?
If it was by Prince.
Yeah, almost certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I disagree quite a lot in that I think their sound is so their sound. It sounds half unfinished. It sounds ethereal but a bit bedroomy. The Prince comparisons are very obvious, but to me it's also a bit like saying if anyone stands up with a guitar, they sound like Bob Dylan, and I always think it's a bit of a lazy comparison. I think there is tons of Prince, but there's tons of D'Angelo, there's tons of Millie Jackson, but it's all fed through this sort of late 20-something West London Asian-influenced filter, which I think completely makes them worthy of their cult following. And I think that, like, while people clamour to work with them and sound a bit like them and kind of appropriate all of this, that they have no interest in it at all. Mm. They did some work with the singer Nao, N-A-O, and they were asked, you know, was this image like an intentionally mysterious thing? And she said, well, they're not tapped in and I don't know if they really give a shit. And she just said, well, they're like normal guys who are trying to find their own route without really playing the game. And I think they're genuinely surprised that people have this kind of interest in them. And as a lame closing point, they have their tentacles in many projects.
Tentacles, not
good enough. Arms.
Shame. Ruined your own argument there.
Shame octopuses don't have tentacles. We are now going to discover our next track. And customarily, we like to feature a new release.
New release.
Nathan, what is that new release?
I've gone for James Holden and the Animal Spirits, The Spinning Dance.
Oh.
That was James Holden and the Animal Spirits with The Spinning Dance, which was released earlier this year on the Border Community label, which is James Holden's record label. James Holden probably first came to attention in 2004 for his now classic remix of the Nathan Fake track The Sky Was Pink. But Holden actually started out making trance music in the early noughties. In 2012, he released The Inheritors, which topped a lot of year-end lists. And then in 2015, he teamed up with Floating Point Sam Shepard, as well as Moroccan Gnawa musician Malem Mahmoud Guinea for the Mahaba EP. Now, there's a lot.
You'd rehearse that, well,
yeah.
Then.
Good pronunciation.
Thanks. Now, I think it's Gnawa, so a kind of silent G, but I haven't heard any pronunciation, so I think it's Gnawa. Gnawa music originates from the traditions of the Gnawa ethnic group in Morocco. It's now a significant part of Moroccan music culture and is a kind of spiritual and ritualistic in form, involving poetry, chanting, repetition, often very long pieces of music, and perhaps most importantly, heavy use of improvisation, all of which served to create a kind of hypnotic, almost trance-inducing sound. And I think all of these elements of the Gnawa music remain on his most recent record, The Animal Spirits.
So, Animal Spirits, we're guessing one of those animals is an octopus. But the element you mentioned there of improvisational spirit to the record, is that some sort of connection to octopuses?
Well, yes, it is actually. Octopuses have large brains, very, I think, perhaps similar to they have a similar number of neurons to dogs, so they're intelligent animals. But most of these neurons, which we would find in humans, which are our brains, for octopuses, they're distributed around their body.
Mm.
So they have 2/3 of the neurons that exist in an octopus exist in the rest of their body. Now, the upshot of this is that their arms have a certain degree of autonomy, so they can make decisions on their own and do things on their own that seems separate from the kind of unified whole, which is the octopus.
You mean if an octopus's arm was chopped off, it would still move and respond?
No, I mean, so there's a couple of examples here. One being, if you imagine an octopus sort of sitting still on the seabed and it's just chilling, its arm just starts wandering off on its own,
okay,
feeling around the seabed and
yeah,
seeing what it can smell and taste and stuff.
I see
and
where that, you're going there.
And that isn't necessarily directed by the central brain of the octopus. These decisions are being made within the neurons that are in the arm.
Mm.
So each arm of an octopus has its own autonomy, has its own capacity to improvise.
So they're as intelligent as dogs, but their intelligence isn't centered on the brain, it's centered throughout their body and along their arms, because a dog's tail does seem to behave similarly to that. Does a dog have neurons in its tail?
I don't know the answer to that question.
why not?
I probably should have done the research. I should have predicted it was going to go that way.
You brought up dogs.
Yeah. So I don't want to mislead you and say, you know, the intelligence of an octopus is equivalent to that of a dog, because it's a very difficult thing to gauge in other creatures.
Mm.
But I think looking at the octopus is a kind of a useful way to think about our own consciousness. I just want to go back a second as well. You've got that one example of where these arms can go wandering off of their own volition.
Mm.
But the other thing as well is that at some point in an octopus's mind or decision process, it can then take control of all those limbs, as we saw in something like Blue Planet,
yeah,
the other week, where this octopus was in control of everything, trying to scare out these fish for the group of fish.
And thereby intelligence is now centralised,
yeah,
from
so
the central brain.
It kind of, I mean, I imagine it, and this probably isn't scientifically correct, but I imagine it's kind of overriding. You could think of maybe a negotiation between the consciousness or some kind of agency of an arm and the full unified consciousness of the octopus's brain. But I imagine at that point, it seems like an octopus's mind overrides any agency in the rest of the arms. And when you think about music, I think if you're going to embody that aspect of an octopus's biology, you would have to think about improvisation within music. Because if we think about jazz or prog rock or anything like that, they're all contained spaces where musicians can improvise, but they improvise within a set range of parameters. They go off and do their own thing, but then they can come back and be part of the whole again, depending upon the instruction or whatever they feel at that particular moment. So I felt like the piece of music I chose had to be in some way improvisational.
What does James Holden say about all this then?
Yeah, was this quite an improvised? Because it has that sound of...
It was recorded like, live.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Most of the records was recorded live, and James and same with his last full album, The Inheritors. I think what he says he does is he records some elements of it completely live, and then he records other elements separately, and then bring them into the music at a later date. So not everything is completely live, and not everything is improvised. But I think you can tell in the spinning dance, the flute is going off on one.
Yeah.
I think it sounds incredible. Mm. But you can imagine the flute here as a tentacle, kind of, or as an arm, sorry.
Jesus.
As an arm doing its own thing.
It looks like one, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It looks like an erect arm, the flute, in a way.
If you must think of it that way. Then...
We must.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was going for the whole improv thing. And I think also I chose this particular track. I could have picked really any James Holden track of the last 10 years because he's been doing it for a very long time. But I chose this because I think you can imagine an octopus performing a spinning dance. And although I know that the rhythm doesn't quite suit an octopus's strut in the same way that Land Cruising does, but you can imagine for its own entertainment, just because he's feeling sad or happy, because octopuses can do that, apparently.
What sense?
I think this is in my head when I was listening to this. You can almost imagine David Attenborough saying in that bit where the music gets a bit jaunty and he says, "The spinning dance
of life."
And you're like, okay, yeah, that sounds like a thing that the octopuses do.
The dance also has connotations, doesn't it, of maybe copulation, maybe spinning dance, and that is one of the great tragedies of the octopus, isn't it? It's a surprisingly sociable animal for one that's born with no parental guidance at all and lives its life entirely alone. It's been reported to take scuba divers by the arm and lead it around the area in which it lives, despite being a completely solitary animal. And when we come to sex and copulation, it barely wants to get anywhere near its partner. The male takes a handful of sperm and dumps it at arm's length. It's called the reach. It dumps the sperm at arm's length into the woman's sack and promptly dies. And very soon it just becomes despondent and just gets eaten because it doesn't care anymore. And the female looks after the young, doesn't eat, and then she dies too when they're born.
Well, no wonder 25 of them went land cruising in Wales.
Yeah.
And just live for the moment.
Yeah.
Before I'd found out all these amazing things about octopuses, I watched a video on YouTube of this man rescuing this teeny tiny little octopus and putting him in a pool of water on the beach. And the octopus kind of crawls over to, after he's been released, crawls over to the guy's foot and puts his arm on the guy's foot as if to say, "Thank you.
Wow.
Thanks for rescuing me."
Oh my goodness.
Which is why all these stories about octopuses being eaten alive, and I know I'm hypocritical saying me as well, but octopuses being eaten alive, being kept in captivity, it seems really barbaric to me. These creatures are incredibly intelligent. Like, if we can find a way to ask an octopus, "Would you like to come and join me in some clinical trials?" and they say yes,
fine,
then we should do
it.
But if we can't, we should leave them the fuck alone.
So we're going to move on to our third song. Sarah, what have you chosen?
I've chosen Believe ESP by Dear Who. That was Believe ESP by Deerhoof, And so they were an experimental pop rock band from San Francisco who formed in 1994. First of all, as an improvisational bass and drums duo. And then the Japanese singer Satomi Matsuzaki joined the following year, just a week after she moved to the United States from Japan. And then she promptly went on tour with them a week later after having never been in a band before, which is pretty cool. Wow. So this song is from the 2007 album called Friend Opportunity, notable because it had 12 album covers designed by the British artist David Shrigley. Yeah. One of them does look a bit like an octopus, but ooh.
Is that it? Is that your argument?
That's it. The end. another interesting thing about Friend Opportunity was after that was released, they were personally invited by David Bowie to play the Highline Festival in New York, which you'd be pretty pleased at that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Personal invite from Dave.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at some lyrics in the song. Paranoia, boogie, oogie, come to ooze. Paranoia, boogie, oogie, come to ooze. Am I missing the...
That's not where I was going. No. The clue's really in the title of the song. So believe ESP, i.e. believe extrasensory perception.
Oh.
Or the ability to sense information with the mind, perhaps even the future. So extrasensory perception includes precognition.
Oh, I think I know you might be referring
what
to.
What do you think you're
extrasensory Paul.
Believe him. Honestly.
The octopus, not this one here.
Don't believe this one.
So this obviously links to one of
but
the
he's
most...
he is extrasensory.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Extrasensory.
So, yeah, exactly. So this links to one of the most famous octopuses of our time. Of course, we've already mentioned him several times. Paul the Octopus, or Die Kraken Paul.
Oh,
yeah. In German.
It's so much better in German.
So a bit of his background. He was born in 2008 in Weymouth, actually, in the Sea Life Centre, and then moved to...
Traitor, the World Cup.
And moved to Oberhausen in Germany. Also
he moved
to
like
centre.
It was a decision. I was like, oh, I'm just bored of Weymouth. I just need to get out.
He needed to get out of town. He needed to start a new life. Exactly. Stopped, Oberhausen music scene.
Stopped by Wales for a little strut across the beach on his way. Then.
So the Sea Life's entertainment director in Germany said of Paul's early days, "There was something about the way he looked at our visitors when they came close to the tank. It was so unusual. So he tried to find out what his special talents were."
Ooh.
And they turned out to be predicting the results of football matches.
What did they go through first?
It was like an episode.
Doesn't say that.
It's like Britain's Got Talent. Yeah. The Sea Life Centre's Got Talent. He tried all sorts.
Was he only good at predicting football matches?
Only predicting football matches, and mainly ones involving Germany.
So they didn't try making him predict other things.
Unclear.
I thought they did, didn't they? Try one other,
yeah,
thing,
yeah, and
like
he got it
an
right.
Election or something, and
oh,
or something. I feel like there's some other thing, and did he get it right?
Oh, I don't know. We only talked about the football matches.
Well, there's a little bit of controversy around because he doesn't have a 100% record.
It's pretty close though.
Yeah,
so
in that World Cup, he was it got 100%.
He got 100% in the 2010 World Cup, but he only got 4 out of 6 games in Euro 2008.
He was just warming up. He was just practicing.
But then he died. Do you think he died of shame?
Well, yeah. So he predicted Spain's defeat over Germany in the semi-finals in the 2010 World Cup, which led to German fans calling for Paul to be eaten.
Yeah.
to which the then Spanish Prime Minister offered to send Paul official state protection. also another interesting fact, the president of Iran accused Paul of being a symbol of Western decadence and decay.
Oh.
Wow, I mean that's a bit much.
A bit strong.
And decay.
I don't know. I think I can see where he's coming from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well it's not Paul's fault he's a symbol.
It's not Paul's fault. No.
He's a symbol of Western decadence. But when you're getting a sentient, intelligent creature to predict the outcome of a fairly meaningless set of football games, then perhaps
it's quite symbolic of that, I suppose.
Perhaps,
but it's still quite
it
fun.
It's a bit, yeah. bit rich coming from a Middle Eastern figure of power, isn't it? To say talk about decadence and decay.
I also think it's a bit prehistoric. It's like people gather around to watch the kicking of a thing. And we've consulted a sea creature to decide who's going to win it. It sounds like medieval stuff.
Yeah, it is a bit. And there was also a bit of a suspicion as to whether it was actually the same octopus in 2008 and 2010, which links back to the song, obviously talks about paranoia.
Oh.
You see?
Come so, to ooze, yeah. And they repeat that line.
Paranoia, come to ooze.
There is.
And also, there's a line later in the song, animal mind crossing the line, the goal line maybe.
Oh.
Do you want to hear about some other animals in Germany that made predictions for
yes,
stuff
that's
around
all
that
I
time?
Want to hear about right now.
And failed, I have to say. So they weren't as successful. Paul was pretty successful. Those that failed included Leon the porcupine, Petty the pygmy hippopotamus, and Anton the tamarin monkey.
Oh.
They did not fare so well.
What happened to them?
Eaten.
Was Petty the pygmy hippopotamus named after Tom Petty?
I assume so.
Who yeah. also died.
He did die.
Yeah.
So it's all linked, you see? You're just backing up my argument.
I don't want to confuse the chronology of the listeners. Tom Petty died this year, didn't he?
Yeah, recently.
Yeah.
Did Petty the...
And this podcast was first recorded in 1992. Just to clarify.
So yeah, that's my argument.
It's
pretty compelling.
I think you may have moved into the lead there as a favourite. But
I'm going to say that was fairly tenuous.
I don't think it's that.
You nearly said
tenuous.
Tentacle there, didn't you?
Yeah.
Tenuous but fun.
Fun?
Yeah.
Do you want to go back into your argument for tenuosity?
No.
I mean, I guess as octopuses go, Paul is a pretty famous one. I can't think of another one. But the one in the Beatles song? I'm glad none of us picked that, by the way.
More about a garden than an octopus.
Yeah, true.
Well, it links back, though, to it being a sentient being, because Ringo Starr apparently...
is an octopus.
wrote that song based on a Sardinian sea captain who said that he had observed octopuses gathering things from the seabed to create something of a garden around its dwelling. And Ringo remembered this story and then wrote that song.
Oh, wow. That's quite cool.
Completely believable as well. Yeah. I mean, about the octopus, about the octopus.
Yeah, more believable that octopuses do that than Ringo.
Than Ringo said writing a song, yeah.
I mean, my other link, just I feel like I need to shore up my argument. Shore up my argument, is that obviously the a singer in Deerhoof is Japanese, and there's a big link in Japanese artwork to octopuses are often featured in the Shunga erotic art.
Yes, quite explicitly.
Very explicit. For example, the very famous Dream of the Fisherman's Wife.
By our man Hokusai.
By Hokusai in 1814.
Yeah.
As we all know.
15 years before he painted The Great Wave. It's the very same Hokusai. And Western audiences thought that was a scene of rape. The image of the octopus giving cunnilingus.
Oh, did they just assume it was a rape scene?
They did, but those critics didn't read the Japanese, which is scrawled around the image, which reads thusly: "You hateful octopus, your sucking at the mouth of my womb makes me gasp for breath. Ah, yes, it's there with the sucker. How are you able? Oh, boundaries and borders gone, I've vanished."
I didn't expect that storyline to play out.
Did not expect that.
It could be a really bad translation, like a Google Translate, like mistranslation.
Did you translate?
Yeah.
You speak about Japanese.
That was it, yeah. We're going to move on to our fourth and final song. We have no idea where we're going to go with this. Paul, reveal all. What have you chosen?
I have chosen Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings. Okay, so that was Samuel Barber's Adagio for Strings. Barber was probably one of the most highly regarded 20th century composers, and Adagio for Strings is undoubtedly his best known piece. It was premiered in 1938 and has soundtracked seemingly every sad scene in pretty much every film or TV show ever since, including The Elephant Man, Platoon, Amelie, The Simpsons, and Red Dwarf. It was also played at Albert Einstein's funeral and was broadcast after the deaths of JFK and FDR. In fact, it was actually JFK's favourite piece of music. Now, this isn't my argument for choosing it, but there's a really bizarre and tenuous link between JFK and octopuses.
Right.
In Staten Island in New York, there's a large bronze monument depicting a giant octopus pulling one of the Staten Island ferries beneath the waves.
Oh, yes, I've seen that.
And on the monument, there's a plaque directing people to a museum where they can find out more about this tragedy. And there's also a website telling about the artifacts that were found and a full backstory to the tragedy.
The tragedy of a ship being dragged underground.
Being dragged underneath the waves by a giant octopus.
I thought
JFK was assassinated.
No, he was on board the Staten Island.
He was drowned by an octopus on the Staten Island ferry.
That's the conspiracy. Yeah. Right, okay.
So the reason given that this event isn't more widely known is that it actually happened on the day of JFK's assassination.
Right.
So it's been forgotten about.
Whoa.
Giant octopus.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
And obviously it caused a bit of a stir. People, you know, how come we haven't heard about it? Seeing this monument and going to the website and finding out more about it. It was actually a massive hoax by a local artist, but it duped a lot of people, and the artist actually had to keep moving the monument around so it wasn't removed by authorities who were dealing with all these phone calls from people asking, why was this, what was this octopus story? And, you know. So that's not the reason I've chosen this. Does anyone have any ideas what it might be?
I've got a very loose reason, but I think yours is probably more specific. But I immediately thought of it in conjunction with... Well, it's just the saddest piece of music, isn't it? It's really intense and really sad and melancholic. And I just related it to the destruction of the Earth and the octopus's habitat.
I mean, that's... Wow. Yeah. No, that's not what I've gone for, but it's, yeah, I mean, all these could be added to the strength of my case.
Perhaps. Can octopuses play the violin?
No, but what if I was to point out that octopuses are bilaterally symmetric?
Oh.
Is that the shape of the piece of music?
So this piece of music is an arch form, which means it's symmetrical, and, I mean, arch form is usually... A, B, C, B, A.
Right.
So the structure of the song, I put it to you.
It's not a song.
Is an octopus.
This piece resembles an octopus. So as it sort of unravels over its languid 8 minutes, it moves up through its arms to its central movement and then goes back out the other side in exactly the same way.
Wow.
Wowee. Yeah, because it's very intense in the middle, isn't it? And then it kind of pairs out again in the same way that it built.
Deepest musical argument we've ever had on the podcast.
So octopuses are what? What do you say they are?
Bilaterally symmetric.
What are the creatures that are bilaterally symmetric?
A cow is a cow.
Yeah.
Moths.
Well, it depends.
Humans.
Are we?
We are.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah. Not entirely.
Here we are.
Not.
Wait. Some of us have got wonky faces.
Yeah.
Most of them. I'm speaking about myself, actually.
Look away. Well,
not completely, though, because of, like, you've only got, like, one gallbladder, for example.
Yeah, there's different extents of it.
Yeah.
I suppose an octopus isn't entirely bilaterally symmetric, then, is it?
Is it, yeah, is it done on sight or on their, like, everything is split evenly down the middle?
Everything's supposed to be split. Well, I mean, they've got one mouth. Which is in the very centre.
It's got two eyes. It's a beak.
What does it actually... I mean, what sense is it a beak? Is it...
It's just what it's called. It looks
like... Has it got anything in common with a...
It just looks like one,
I
think.
It just looks like
it's hard as well.
It's hard and small.
Yeah. It can bite, yeah, it can chop. And the way that it eats, the way that it moves food close to the beak so it can be eaten with its arms, mean that actually its arms are more like lips.
Do you know they hunt crabs, right? Some of them.
Yeah,
when they're land cruising.
You mentioned that.
Be quiet.
How do they eat crabs? I don't know if you've gone to a restaurant and tried eating crab. It's a fucking nightmare.
Well, no, this one, when they walk over the land bit, they sort of just go over a crab and it just sort of...
I think they just
whatever crabs they can find, I guess.
They have a beak, and then inside the beak they have some sharp things as well, like they're like teeth that crunch
so
it up.
So crunch
they have to,
it up,
they have to chew,
yeah,
then excrete the shell.
They chew crab.
They chew it. Yeah.
Are you know this for sure?
That's hardcore.
I'm pretty sure that's true.
They chew crab.
Yeah, they bite it and chew it. Yeah, they just chew it up.
If we say it enough, it becomes fact.
Yeah, exactly.
They
definitely chew crab.
They chew crab.
Yeah. That's the but they don't like squid. It was squid, incidentally, that the octopus was holding its arm when it plugged the plug hole.
Yeah. Well, it's like
octopuses don't like
yourself, yeah.
It's like a pigeon eating a sparrow.
That's a much better analogy.
This does happen.
Does it?
Well, I've seen a pigeon eating a seagull once.
Oh my God.
Or the other way around.
Well, I've seen them eating fried chicken.
Surely the other way around.
Yeah. You've seen them eating fried chicken, yeah.
Imagine a seagull devouring a pigeon. Go to town on a pigeon.
It's like a human eating a cow. It's disgusting.
Oh, that's
gross.
That's weird. Well, octopuses don't have milk like a cow, but they do have they do have ink.
Like a cow?
Like a squid.
Like a human.
But like squid ink.
Yeah, they can jettison ink out as a form of defence.
To confuse people.
To cover themselves up so they can't be seen. Like a.
They can also remove their arms, can't they?
Can they? Or just take them off?
Detach them.
Yeah, they can detach an arm, and so it distracts its prey.
No.
So the prey goes over there, and then they scuttle off in the other direction. It can grow it back.
So it can sacrifice.
It can sacrifice an arm.
I thought
big. Like, they wouldn't do that often, though, would
No.
Because it must take a long time
it must
to grow
be.
Back.
I guess it must be a lot of effort.
The way you said detachable, I just thought you meant, you know, like when you get a broom to get something from under the fridge or something. So just, if it's a bit too far away.
No, it's detachable.
It's like a bee has a sting and it would sacrifice itself if it uses the sting.
Because it can never be removed.
But this octopus can regrow an arm. That's phenomenal. What other defence mechanisms does an octopus have?
Venom.
It has venom, it does, yes. Only one can be deadly to humans. They can impersonate other creatures. There's an octopus that can walk.
What, like a goat?
Because it's so flexible, it can impersonate other sea creatures.
Oh, okay.
So it can impersonate sea snakes and crabs and cuttlefish.
Well done.
And scare other potential prey away.
They're absolutely amazing, aren't
they're
they?
They're good at hiding as well, aren't they? That's one of their other things. They just squidge into different little holes and hide.
Well, yeah, so I was reading a bit about the theory behind why it is they have always distributed neurons and they have sort of agency in their own arms and stuff like that. And that's because I think the sort of evolutionary argument is that they don't have, they're invertebrates, right? They don't have a bone structure. So if you don't have a bone structure, it makes it much harder to control the limbs that you have. So in order to be able to control them properly, you have to sort of have all those neurons around the arm, because otherwise, you know, it's just gonna flop about.
Yeah. I see.
You sound really interested in that.
This arms thing, which I wondered about, is because I kind of equated it to, you know, if you're sitting watching a film and you got a bowl of popcorn and you're like, it's like automatically feeding yourself, you're twiddling your hair. Like we do, kind of do that.
We walk without having to think.
Oh, I'm gonna move my arm over there.
When you're driving, often you don't.
Automatically,
you wouldn't find your hand just wandering off on its own.
I might.
Please, I mean, please be careful.
I mean, I think I have. I think
get
I
get off
have,
me. Jeez.
When I walk downstairs, I have that. My brain shuts off and my legs keep going until I sometimes forget what I'm doing.
I've seen you walk downstairs and your brain is completely dead.
Yeah. It's true.
They sacrificed their hard shell bodies to be free of shell and obviously become much more vulnerable in the sea to larger prey. Over evolution, millions of years.
They used to be related to those really long-shelled things, didn't they?
Yeah. I mean, they were related to us, but only 6 million years ago. The closest ancestor we have to octopuses is just a sea worm from millions of years ago.
Oh, really? Gosh.
Yeah, it has nothing in common with primates and dogs and humans, all the rest of it.
I thought it was the same as a dog.
It's as intelligent, but it's different intelligence which can't be measured.
It can fit through the space of size of its eye.
Did Samuel Barber have a dog?
What was your argument about?
Oh no, it was the.
It sort of looks.
It was the brilliant, by the way.
It's a great argument. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah. Oh
yeah.
It was really
the
good.
Structure of the song musically is.
It's not a song. Like it's just a piece of music.
Much like many other creatures that exist in the world.
Yes.
And like most that's other songs.
It's really.
That's actually no.
No, that's not
true. There's very few songs that are in arch form. So like A, B, C, B, A.
Okay.
Because most songs, our first course.
A B A B.
Yeah.
What's the term again for the bilaterally what?
Symmetric.
Bilaterally symmetric. So there are lots of creatures other than the octopus that are bilaterally symmetric.
Okay. You have honed in on the key weakness of the audience. Right.
It's a big one.
I'm just mainly thinking about that bit in Brasso when they're talking about a spherical song.
Okay, that's going to draw us to the end of the episode where we now vote for which song we think is best to embody the octopus.
Time to vote.
We're going to start with the person who went first. It was you, Richie. Who's the winner for you and why?
I'm going to have to shuffle over and put my ball in the pot of Paul the Octopus's hilarious tribute to Sarah.
Are you referring to the reach?
No, not the reach. Don't talk about the reach. He chose, he basically had two boxes with the flags of the relevant teams on it, and they had like either a mussel or a clam or an oyster or something in, and he chose.
I'm waving my flag for that one.
Thanks, Rich.
Nathan.
I'm torn between Richie's and Sarah's argument. Sorry, Paul. And the reason I'm going to go for Land Cruising by Richie, even though I didn't actually like the song, is because I love the idea of octopuses strutting around on the beach, number one. And two, actually, I don't want to hate on your argument, but I just don't like this idea of octopuses being captive. And I don't know how much say we're laughing at Paul, but what say did Paul have in this whole affair? No one asked him if he wanted to predict the outcome of football games. Well,
he did it. He could have just not chosen one of the boxes.
Well, he was cursed by his talent.
Yeah, imagine what he could have done if he was out in the open sea.
And predicting all kinds of
things. There was an argument to release him after he became famous. Actually, but
so
then,
I thought your argument was great, and Paul the Octopus sounds amazing. But because it would mean like venerating the octopus in captivity, then I can't go for it, and that's why I'm going for Rich.
Thank you,
Sarah.
Yes, it's a tricky one. They're all equally strong contenders. For me, Paul's, yours is too tenuous, and I think my interpretation of it is actually much better than yours was. Riches I liked, but I just can't associate strutting with the movement of an octopus. And the reason I'm going to go for Nathan's is that when I listened to the song, it made me feel like that was the kind of piece of music an octopus might make or listen to.
Paul.
I think the real winner here is the octopus itself. So much extraordinary information about it. Yeah. So I suppose I've got the casting vote here, but one vote each.
Oh man, yeah, you have.
It's difficult. I'm going to go with the song I like the least, which is actually Nathan's choice.
Oh.
Yeah, the song does nothing for me, but I really enjoyed all of your research around the octopus, and yeah, I'm going to go with you.
Thanks, mate.
So, there you have it. The song that best embodies the octopus is... What's it called again?
Pay attention, please.
Adagio for Strength.
That would be my choice.
I think he's been robbed. He's been robbed this week, massively.
Yeah, hugely.
It's an amazing argument.
Paul can never win. That's the... Anyway. Is The Spinning Dance by James Holden and the Animal Spirits. Well done, Nathan.
Well done, Nathan.
Check out these songs in full and other octopus-themed music on the accompanying playlist you'll find at our website, therestisnoise.org. It's every inch as impressive as our invertebrate cousins. Next episode's topic. We're reaching out to the lovelorn and the lonely with songs to listen to before a date. What tune has ever given you a boost towards date night success and why? Let us know on Facebook, Twitter or at our website. Right, a word of victory from our winner.
It's all about distributed neurons.